We hope this explanation of God's word enriches your life. To help you understand the audience for this talk, we suggest you read the context material on the About Us page. Please read also our copyright page before recording or reproducing any material from philipjensen.com. The following sermon was given at St. Matthias Family Church, where Philip Jensen was senior minister.
Come in December, towards the time of the year when we make plans about the next year. That is, not having finished this one, we've got to start getting ready for the next. You'll notice on the back of the outline, reference is made to two meetings, which are details of plans for next year. One is the ladies' morning tea that will be held this Thursday morning down in the rectory, which all the ladies are very cordially welcome to hear Reverend Bert Bovis lead the discussion on the subject of next year's Billy Graham crusade. If you want more details about that, you could see Winston Tong over morning tea this morning. The other is the Friday the 3rd meeting of next month, where we'll actually be showing a Billy Graham film and discussing our plans for next year. But it's not only for the plans for Billy Graham crusade and for the church, it's plans for our own lives, isn't it, that we make about this time of the year. What I will do, where I'll go, what changes I might make to my job and occupation, what plans I'll do, when I'll take my holidays and so forth. It's actually been said of humans that it's one of the characteristic marks of being human that we make plans. We make plans on a much more long-term basis than almost any other creature. We make plans with great clarity and detail. Indeed, I suppose it's about this time of the year that you can start buying in your diaries for next year and your one-year planners so that you can write every day of the year up and scribble in it and put little blue and green and red marks to indicate what you will be and won't be doing. But yet in the activity of planning, James sees the great potential man has for arrogance. He takes it up in the occasion of the traders who say, today and tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and get gain. And he sees in this arrogance the presumption of life, that they will live, the presumption that they have mastery over their life, the presumption that their mastery will enable them to do what they want to do. That we will live this week and this year and next year, we actually assume, we presume that that will be the case. For we have been alive so long, and there's no reason to think that we will not live in the coming days. I take it that is the case of most of us, that we enjoy such good health. We presume that if we're in good health, we will be in long life, and we will not be cut down. Here is the presumption that these traders have. Today we'll do this, tomorrow we'll do that, next year we'll be doing such and such. We assume that we will be continuing on. So often at funerals, I've heard people saying, it's a great shame because he was planning to play golf next Tuesday. Or sometimes it's a little bit more profound than golf, although some people wouldn't think that you could get more profound than golf. It'll be things like, he's been saving up so long and looking forward to the opportunity of the great trip next year on his retirement. That is, in the middle of our plans about what we will do next year, or the year after, or tomorrow, the assumption that we will be alive is very radically called into question. Yet we all stand guilty of this, don't we? None of us live as if we're going to die before the day's out. We all keep on thinking we're going to be alive tomorrow, or the day after, or next year. But more than that, we presume that we'll be in control of it. That we can go where we please and do what we want, as these people assume. Come, they say, today, tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town, spend a year there, we will trade. We're in control of what we're doing. and I suppose in our society, we even feel that more acutely, for we are people who are free men. In James's society, there were many who were slaves and were not free to say, I will go into any town next year. But in our society of free people, we feel that mastery. If I wish to go into such and such a town, I will go. If I want to practice a certain trade, I will practice it. I'm a free man to do as I want, when I want, where I want, how I want. And no one will tell me how to live. No one will restrict me from living the way I want to live. And so I can make grand plans for my own life. Now, that too, of course, is an error. For so many of my grand plans are impossible plans that do not come to pass. So many of them have been frustrated by my inadequacies, by the fact that other people have beaten me to the punch, by the fact that not everybody can play test cricket for Australia. There's all kinds of reasons why I do not have my plans fulfilled. But yet I still go on presuming a certain degree of mastery over my life. Which leads on to the third one, that is the ability I have for fulfilling my plans, that we will go and, as the word should be, get gain. All types of difficulty with my writing. We will go and get gain, not get you. We may go and get you too, but that's not what we're talking about. Here is the confidence of the traders. They're not only going to go and trade for a year, they are assured that the balance sheet will show that they're in profit by the end of the year. They are going to get gain. There is a phrase current in our society at the moment which goes, you win a few, you lose a few. But it's never a phrase someone uses before the venture. They only ever use that one after the venture, and especially after having lost a few. No one enters into a venture saying, oh well, you win a few, lose a few, here we go. But rather, we go in with confidence that we will win. Is that not how our politicians went in last night or yesterday? Great confidence. They told you they were going to win. They told you they were both going to win. I knew that was impossible, but they didn't. They were assured that they would win. And we all stand guilty in exactly the same thing, that we have plans really on unfounded confidence. And we continue like that. We continue to think that through our mastery of our own life, we will be able to look after ourselves. If I work hard enough now and save enough money and make the right investments, and own the right kind of house, and have the kind of securities that are in the bank and wherever else I may wish to place them, then I will be safeguarded in the future. My family will be able to eat. We'll always be, in some way, looked after. We do put confidence in our financial system, even though you do not need a very long memory to know of the total collapse of our financial system, even though you do not need anything but a short memory to see how utterly brittle our financial system is. Yet we go on living in confidence that if we play the financial system correctly, we can live with a certain degree of security and stability and safety. We presume on our ability and the ability of our society. But look at the facts, as James looks at the facts. Verse 14, whereas you do not know about tomorrow, what is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. The first two facts that he produces are negative ones, really. He says we are ignorant. He says we are frail. Certainly we know lots about all kinds of things. Educated people possibly that have ever lived. We really do know so much. But we are ignorant. ignorant about our futures. We can guess by certain degrees of probability as to what the likelihood is for tomorrow or the day after, but yet we do not know what our future holds. None of us know. We cannot know. Who would have guessed that it would turn out like this? Is the phrase of people who acknowledge that they do not know beforehand. What does your future hold? What does my future hold? Who could make such a prognostication that they could be as certain that, yes, your future will be, you'll make it to morning tea this morning? I've felt that many occasions, only to have the milk run out before I get there. I have felt that many occasions, only to be sidetracked by my lovers talking to people that I forget about it until the washing up's on. There's all kinds of ways of stopping me short of having a heart attack, I may say, from getting to morning tea. All manner of ways. Who can know anything of the future? Say nothing of people not having turned the urn on. It did happen once. Just look from the cords there, so I'm sure it's right. What does our future hold? Last Sunday morning, who would have expected that Johnny O'Keefe at 43 would be dead? It is a great shock and surprise. I really didn't spend much time last Sunday morning thinking about Johnny O'Keefe, I confess. But who would have thought that he'd be dead? Who would have thought at the beginning of this year that Alderman Leo Port would be dead? And that we'd have a new Lord Mayor? Who would have suspected such a possibility, such a turn-up? We see it, of course, with the politician who says that his side is going to win when it is defeated so forcefully, so overwhelmingly that he loses his own seat. That's an incredible piece of foresight and understanding of what the future holds. But those are negative things. Why don't we put it positively? Who of us knows that we may this afternoon make a new friendship. A new friendship that will change the course of our days and our years for many years ahead. The character of our life might be transformed by that new person that we meet this afternoon and who will bring new factors to bear in our lives that we never knew of, we didn't think of. That we may be actually offered a job that will open up for us new opportunities that we haven't thought of before. New ways of work, new money or less money or something or other, but it may change our life. We might come to new understanding from God through the reading of his word and fellowship with his people that will lead to our lives being changed. That, I take, has got a strong possibility if we want it. But who knows? And even when we do know a bit of the future, it's such a small glimmering thing. I know I'm going to die, but I don't know when or how, under what circumstances. Or think of Abraham. Abraham knew that he was going to be the father of many nations. He was told that. He was told that clearly, that he'd be the father of many nations. And so he adopted in Eliezer of Damascus. God said, no, that is not going to be your son. So he has a son through Hagar, his wife's slave. And he has the son Ishmael, and he says, all right, here is the one through whom I'm going to be the father of many nations. And God says, no, Ishmael's not the one. You're going to have a son through your own wife. And so he has Isaac. And he puts Isaac as the one through whom he will have many nations. But as it turns out, the New Testament, Isaac wasn't the one either. Jesus was the son through whom Abraham has many nations. That is a surprise, isn't it? For most of us, if not all of us, have not come from Jewish background. We do not by race wish to say that Abraham is our forefather, although given thousands of generations, we may well have come from Jewish background. But yet we would call Abraham our father, for he is the father of all who believe. Now there's a turn up for the book, isn't it? Do you really think that Abraham thought about that as a possibility? I'd suggest not. Even though he knew his future at this particular point, he still didn't know it. So the true state of man, first of all, is ignorance about future, which would mean that as planners, we can't expect too much success, can we? We really mustn't put too much confidence in our plans. Very foolish to be doing that, isn't it? It's bad enough being ignorant to start with, but then to base your plans on your ignorance is foolishness compounded. But more, we're frail. Time is so deceptive a thing, isn't it? Ahead of us, it always looks long. Behind us, it always looks very quick. Yesterday was a birthday party in the Jensen household, and one of the little children I overheard say to Matthew, I thought it would take 1,000 years for your birthday to come. I knew exactly how you felt, but I mean, it gives you great problems if you only turn another year old every 1,000 years. That is like being a leap year baby, isn't it? Only in the extreme. So you know how the little boy feels, don't you? You know how the things you want to take place seem forever and ever and ever coming. And you know, when they've come, they're over in a flash. Quick as it can be. You know that each year seems to go quicker than the last year, doesn't it? It's natural enough, seeing that it's a smaller percentage of my lifetime each time, a smaller percentage of my consciousness each year. No longer 1/6 or 1/12 or 1/24, I won't go any further. It's just getting smaller and smaller each time. And so it seems that we're in October already. Well into October already. 10 and a bit months are over. Nine and a bit months are over already this year. That's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? It was only the other day that I started off in the ministry here in this building. It was only a couple of weeks back, it feels. Although that's 9 months ago. That took place. The time charges along afterwards. Now, we've given a standard. We've given a measure as to how long we've got. 60+10, or possibly by strength, 40. That's how long we've got. And when you're 3 or 4, 60+10 sound an enormous number that you needn't worry about. But by the time you reach the 60 and 10's not so far off. Yet, even then, we don't think of it in its transience. See, how old do you have to be middle-aged? We tend to think 45 to 55, 60. 35 is middle-aged. I mean, 60, my maths is not very good, but I can handle that much. Between 35 and 40, that's your halfway point. But we don't think of that as being the halfway point. But rather, like some pathetic creature with a max factor company all plastered across the face, we pretend to be what we're not. Even a half-blind man looking to the sun can see that some are not as old as they want to be. They want to pretend. Sorry, some are much older and they want to pretend to be. There's a terrible pathetic-ness about it, don't there? It's shockingly hopeless to see someone who is so old desperately trying to be young, not coming to face-to-face with reality. Ours has been a serious ignorance if we forget our transitoriness, our transience rather. I was raised on the adage that a graveyard is full of indispensable men. It's a very good adage to keep remembering, especially those of us who believe that we are indispensable. The fool is told by God, "This night your soul is required of you." And then, whose will these possessions be? How long will you be remembered after they're gone? After you're gone? That said, building is not very full of the stones around about us, but I can read up there about Mr. George H. Johnston. You can read some of the other plaques. But does anyone know Mr. George H. Johnston? Or remember Mr. George H. Johnston? Or know anything that Mr. George H. Johnston did? Well, the only things you know are what's written up on the wall there. You can't be sure they're telling the truth, can you? I mean, the person who paid for it's not going to be writing something that's detrimental to Mr. George Johnston. Now, I'm not saying Mr. George Johnson ever did anything wrong. I'm just saying that, so what is the life of George Johnson? We can't even find a group of people sitting in the very same building that he sat in for some X number of years to even remember that he existed, except that it's written up there on the wall for you to remember that he existed, or at least to be taught that he existed. And he is but one of the hundreds who did sit in this building. We are but just a mist, says James. That is what our life is like, a mist. You wake up in the morning, it's there. You go in and put the kettle on, you come back, it's gone. That is what our life is like. No more than that. And to write on the wall, there was a mist this morning, really doesn't contribute much more to the longevity of the mist, or to the importance of the mist. Just muck up the wall. Some, of course, perceive this frailty. And what to say, let's eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Perhaps we want to move into nihilism whereby you don't make any plans, because there is no purpose, no meaning, no value, no nothing anywhere. So you may as well just stuff your face as fast as you can with as many pleasant sensations as is possible. Others, in their ignorance, try to pretend that they are not frail and can make great plans. But James gives us the advice as to what we do, should do, in verse 15. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this and do that. For my life is dependent upon him. And here is James' point, that as creatures we depend upon our Creator. And thus we ought to always be saying, if God wills, for our lives, our careers, our fortunes, our families, our futures, all reside in God's will. He rules over us at the moment and over us in the future. For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, he is the determiner of the quality of our lives. And thus my mental set, my attitude to life, must be one of seeking his will and not seeking to make plans over against his will, as if somehow I have mastery in the world beyond him. I mustn't absolutize my plans, turn them into great absolutes. I will do this, irrespective of what takes place. I am going to. There's no way I can make plans like that without being godless. Mustn't presume, but in all my plans, to say, if God wills. Paul does it frequently, although it's not frequently said in the Bible, but Paul does it in Acts 18, 1 Corinthians 4, 16, Philippians 2. He says, I'm coming to you if God wills, if the Lord permits. Frequently and usually in the Bible, the writers don't say it, although that lies at the heart of their understanding of the situation. Whether we say it or whether we but believe it, that must be our mental set, that if God wills, I will do what I will. And if it is that I'm to be dependent upon the God's will, then I must seek for God's will as well, especially if I want to avoid frustration in life, when my plans are constantly being held back from fulfillment. If I seek God's will from the word go, then I might be able to do the things that he wants me to do and enjoy the benefit of having my plans fulfilled. Here then, says James, is a great area for evil for us. For our boasting is an evil. Indeed, it is a very type of evil itself, isn't it? The presumption, the arrogance, that I can run my own life without God. That is what sin is all about. That is what rebellion is all about. But we can do that evil by omission. So, oh yeah, I know God there, he runs everything else, but I'm going to do it my way anyway. There is the sin of omission. In fact, I just don't actually include God in my thinking. That's just left out. I buy my diary for next year and I rule up what I'm going to do without so much as a prayer, asking God to give me guidance about the future, asking God to give me guidance as to what he would will for me to do, and indeed make the plans up and say, well, I'm going to do this, as if God cannot stop me from doing it either. So, if I know what is right to do and fail to do it, then I sin, says James in verse 17. For all such boasting, be it the active boasting of the unbeliever or the passive boasting of the believer who doesn't take his belief into action, into his thought, is evil. The sin of commission or of omission. DV of the Latin, DV of the letters, they're not Latin letters, they're just letters, of the letters which signify the two Latin words, God willing. And you can write them at the top of every page of your diary if you like. Of course, if you don't believe it, well, it doesn't do very much for you except for take a little bit of your time. What's important is not that you write that there, but that you believe it. However, writing it may not be any harm to you as a reminder of the true situation. But the attitude is what is essential. But next Thursday morning, women's morning tea, ladies' morning tea for that little grown thing only takes place, God willing. We do not know what will take place between here and Thursday morning. But if God wills, it will take place. We must look to God in all our attitudes. So the actions that I commend to you this morning are thought actions. I'll put it into the practical if you like. That is, that as we come to this time of the year, it's a good time to look at our plans. Pray for a rainy afternoon that you might spend an hour or so going through your plans and asking, is this the will of God? Can I find the will of God in this area of my life? And secondly, committing it to my mind and heart that these plans will only take place if God wills, so that my heart won't be frustrated and disappointed when the things I want don't take place. But I can rejoice that God has overruled for my benefit once more, and can be glad that God is the Lord of heaven and earth. And so in practical terms, sit down with your plans. Work them out in terms of God's will. In practical long-term idea, develop the set of mind, the mental attitude, which prefixes all our plans and statements of the future by the phrase, by the idea, by the concept, if God wills. Well, then I truly am doing what I ought to do as one of his creatures. Let's sing our next hymn, which is an opportune hymn, which takes up that very idea. Forth in thy name, O Lord, I go, my daily labours to pursue, thee, only thee, resolve to know in all I think, or speak, or do.
Thank you for listening to the talks on philipjensen.com. Please check our copyright page before recording or reproducing any material on philipjensen.com.